You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.9 for Cricket Every Day. My name's Mark Machado from the Murrayfield in London, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Vasudevan from the Paparay. If you think I've sounded a bit nasally, you're right, I've got a bit of a blocked nose. It's kind of cold and flu season in London. You're listening to Sri Lanka 99.9 for your new home for Sri Lanka content. We drop it into your podcast feed and on YouTube and the 99.94 app several times every week. So please do rate, review and subscribe. Thank you for joining Cricket's conversation. Before we start, we should also let you know we love your comments. So leave your comments wherever you're listening to this. If you're watching it on YouTube, leave your comments down below. And also, tell all your friends and family about us. Tell us we're here. If you disagree with something we say, as long as you're not rude about it, we want to know why you think that or why you think what we're saying is wrong. Let us know. We're always trying to further our knowledge. We at no point have ever claimed to know everything about cricket. Anyway, Estelle, how you doing? Yeah, the Lanka Premier League. Obviously, I've been quite clear that I believe this is the premier franchise tournament in the world. It started with a bang a few days ago earlier this week. We went into it in our preview episode. We said the team to look out for, the team we're all most excited to see what they're going to do, are going to be the Jaffna Kings. And they've definitely the ones who've come out and performed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they didn't start off well, did they? In that first game, they looked well out of that game until like the midway mark in Gaul's innings, but just somehow managed to pull things back. I think what's most impressive is the fact that they no longer have Vanindu. Vanindu was their top wicket taker in both the previous seasons. They don't have Hasaranga this time around, but they've still managed to find some kind of, you know, that magic they had in the first two seasons. They've managed to kind of maintain it. I'm very excited to see how it goes, because I did say in the previous episode that I'd like to see somebody else kind of challenge for the title. But right now, just two games in, but Jaffna is looking really good, particularly with the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. The other team that has started with an absolute bang is Vanindu's side, the side he's moved to. The Falcons have well and truly landed from Kandy. They've impressed me a lot as well. And again, seem to be the early pace setters along with Jaffna, right?
Yeah, I think looking at the squads, a lot of people were talking about how those two teams are going to be kind of the front runners. Jaffna, in the sense that not so much, in the sense that, you know, they've got some of their players like Tisra Pereira, Shoaib Malik, don't really play international cricket anymore. So although they are experienced and they have the record behind them, they're not in the game currently, right? But Kandy, on the other hand, had managed to rope in quite a few good players, and particularly with the likes of Chamika Kaunaratna and Pathum Nisanka also coming into the side with Vanindu Hasaranga, they look like a really strong side, and they started the tournament really, really strongly. I'm very excited to see the matchup between the two sides, because that'll be very interesting to see how things go.
Yeah, that looks like that is going to be one heck of a game, isn't it? The first thing that strikes me about watching the Lanka Premier League is I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of the LPL is. Is it to develop Sri Lanka's players so that when they go on to play, to give them the best opportunity, to give Sri Lanka the best opportunity to be successful internationally, to give them exposure against, firstly, to kind of, I suppose, boil down the pool, give them the whole kind of, as much as is possible, the kind of carnival atmosphere of international cricket, or as close to as possible, of franchise cricket, and to get them also exposure against playing against international players. Or is it to build up an actual viable product for that could make money for Sri Lanka cricket, as in the governing body, and you know, be a product that is marketed and, around the world and has a huge audience around the world. Because I feel at the moment, when you look at it, it feels like it's somewhere in the middle, right? Because it is doing kind of all of those things. But I think if it is going to be a marketable product, they need to do a little bit more. And I'm mainly thinking they need to make it look a bit more for spectacle. I think the cricket's quite entertaining. I think it's a decent quality. There's actually, because of the nuances of Sri Lanka cricket, you're seeing of cricket in Sri Lanka, you're seeing things that you might not see in other leagues. For example, just the variety of bowlers on display, the amount of left arm spin. To be honest, we haven't seen too many slingers at the moment, but I'm sure at some point down the line we'll start to see them reemerge. But when I look at it on TV, I just think there's, from a production perspective, and I should also kind of say I do come from a production background myself, I think that they can kind of jazz up the show a little bit. And I think the first thing they've got to try and do is get bigger crowds in the stadium, right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the reason that it doesn't look the kind of the product that you want it to be. It's the crowds. And I think it's interesting. I think playing it in Colombo would have been somehow worse because I don't think there would have been crowds in Colombo either. I'm hopeful Palakkale will produce more crowds because generally we've seen bigger crowds in Palakkale, and this time it'll be the first time they are playing the LPL there. So I'm hopeful this next stage, so after today's game, this weekend's games should have a bigger crowd. Also, just coming back to the whole purpose of it, I think, I mean, in an ideal world, we'd want it to be developing players, but I think at the end of the day, it's meant to be a product that makes Sri Lanka cricket money, right? But is it not weird? Friday's a rest day. That is, and I think this happened last season as well, where either it was a public holiday or something, and there were no games on that day. Which to me is so strange because if you are expecting people to come, it's going to be for the night games and it's going to be on the weekend, right? So to, in a, like essentially a 2 to 3 week tournament, you give up one weekend. It's a real waste. I feel like, you know, not having that game on Friday, maybe they should have, I don't know, started one day late or, I don't know, done something so that they could fit in a game at least on Friday night, which I'm sure would have drawn bigger crowds than we've seen during the week so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think not having a game on a Friday night is a total disaster for the tournament. Though I wonder if that was a TV issue, right? If TV schedulers said, you know what, there's actually a lot of other cricket going on tomorrow. You might not be able to get space and global schedules around the world. You know, how much really, you know, can the Lanka Premier League...
But Mark, this is the best league, the biggest league in the world,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly, right?
They've got to make space.
I'll be honest, you know, Pakistan versus England's due to start tomorrow. I would much rather watch Dambulla versus Gaul, to be honest. I think that's a much more exciting fixture than a test match involving Pakistan and England. Especially because if Pakistan are going to create these pitches that are high scoring, they'll be like, no wickets to throw, it'll be dull. Don't watch that. Watch the Lanka Premier League. So yeah, I totally agree, Esther. I think that they've missed the boat here. Should we take a quick break? We've talked about Jaffna, we've talked about Candy. Let's talk about the other teams, and also at some stage, let's talk about the players that have caught your eye so far.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI. We've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
We talked about the two teams that have started the tournament really well. I want to talk about Gaul and Dabula now, because they have not had great starts to the tournament. That the Aura side, led by Mickey Arthur, just to me seems to kind of promise a lot, and at this stage I think is totally under delivering, right?
Yeah, and you know what's weird is that every season Dambul have had a good side, right? They're led by Sri Lanka's white ball keeper Dasun Shanaka. They have good players in their ranks, and they seem to be drawing good overseas talent as well, but just don't seem like they're able to put those performances together. It's weird because, I mean, you expect them to do well, particularly like, I mean, guys like Sikandar Raza, they've got some good players in there, but just not able to deliver. So I don't know what it is. And we spoke about Mickey Arthur off air as well, about, you know, his strengths as a coach. And to me, what I see is he's very much the type of coach who wants to develop talent. But does that work in a setup like the LPL, where essentially it was announced that he was coach maybe a couple of days before the tournament began? So I don't know whether it's the coaching or the, I mean, you can't blame it on the coaching entirely, because obviously they haven't done well in the previous seasons as well. But what is going on with that side is a question mark, because they seem to have the players. They've got Bhanuka Rajapaksha as well, but just aren't able to deliver in these tournaments. So I wonder if the change of ownership is an issue, because they've had three different owners in the season.
Presumably, though, the change of ownership can't really be an issue, even the change of coach, because we all know that they were playing Afghanistan. You know, a lot of this squad, their key players, their leadership were playing Afghanistan, or were, you know, are foreign players who weren't in the country until about 4 days or 2 or 3 days before the tournament started, right? That's the nature of franchise cricket, is that it all comes together just a few days before it. And I know some of the more established franchise teams around the world have kind of ongoing leadership groups that look after the team during the off-season and look at things. But I don't think, you know, even though the London Premier League is the best franchise league in the world, I don't think we're at a stage yet where... you know, we know the Aura side just aren't doing that, because me and you are totally at this stage still unclear on who the owners actually are. So that can't possibly, you know, we know there's not much continuity, but we also know that that's how it works in franchise cricket, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're the only side who've had three different owners, but every other side has also had changes in ownership. So I don't know. That's, I think, a question they need to answer if they want to see some success in the LPL. And I don't know, maybe they come from these two losses and then, you know, win it all. But it is strange that they aren't doing well, particularly with the squad that they have.
And Gaul, traditionally one of the stronger teams in the league, they've also had a disastrous start to the tournament. What's your kind of take of what's been going wrong for them?
Yeah, they are the complete opposite, right? They've had the same owners for the past three seasons. They seem to be well managed. Of course, the Gladiators franchise, which started at the PSL, is what manages the squad. So they do seem to kind of invest in the younger players, and I'm excited to see some of those players. You've got Nuanindu, Fernando, Tanuka Dabare, Movin Subasingha, who I think is definitely a prospect to have your eye on. They've got a few young players, and we have seen them start badly in tournaments. I think it was in the first season where they won like two games in the group stage, still made it through, and then were the finalists in the end. So they still have time. They haven't started well. I think overall, they've just not looked good with the bat. I think they look a bit too dependent on Kusal Mendes, and that could turn out to be a problem, because obviously he's not going to make runs in every game, right? So that could turn out to be a big problem for them.
There's been some exceptional performances already. Kusil Mendes' knock was incredible. He's had a good knock. And Patton Vasankas had a good knock. And we saw the Jafner openers have a good knock in their second match. Carlos Braithwaite, who will be known to... In England, he's deemed too good for our franchise league, in England, the English one, the 100, and is a commentator over here. But it's been great to see him score runs and get wickets as well. Because what I love more than anything about it is seeing the foreign stars come over and actually cause the shrunken players real issues and make them think. And I think it's going to develop their game, right?
Yeah, and Andre Fletcher, another one who's you know, done his time around the world at franchise leagues. For me, I would say the most impressive has been Viaskant from Jaffna, because I'll be honest, I did not see him making that playing 11. I felt like Sumitha Lakshan would be the one they pick now that there's no one in Duhasaranga, that they'd go with his leg spin. He's, of course, been in Sri Lanka squads. He's been around the Sri Lanka setup. But obviously, Thirinna Kandambi has been, you know, he's had his eye on Viaskant. And see, the thing is, when he was picked, and I know this...
Estelle, I'm going to stop you there, right? Because I want to take a quick break, because I was going to save the last part of the show to talk about him, because I think he's been so extraordinary. And I think the trajectory of the 3 years that he's been involved in it has been incredible.
I don't just do this podcast. I also host Red Inca, which is a show that covers far more modern stories. We look at the trends within the game, tell stories about the modern great players, and look at what is really going on in global cricket. You can find Red Inca by searching for it in your podcast app or on YouTube, or by downloading the 99.94DM app.
So Estelle, sorry, I stopped you in your flow. Let's talk about Viaskant again, because he, for me, he's been the breakout star of at least the first couple of rounds of this tournament. And I think it's a testament to the investment that the Jaffna franchise, and it is, you've got to call it a franchise because it's now across two ownerships, have put into him, right?
Yeah, it's funny because I know when he was picked for that first game, I'm sure a lot of people must have been thinking, you know, this is just, you know, for representative purposes, right? You want the guy from Jaffna to be playing in the side, because Jaffna have the franchises have obviously kind of made that kind of commitment in the past as well. But
I'll just clarify.
Yeah,
he is the only, I think, is there another player that is from Jaffna in the setup?
There are other players in their squad.
Yeah, there are.
I believe he was the first Jaffna-born cricketer to appear in a televised game in Sri Lanka, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. And
at least he was, after the Civil War.
And I think he was the first Jaffna-born player to play for a Sri Lanka underage side as well, right? In at least quite a long time.
But there are quite a few. I think in the first season, there were five guys from Jaffna. This season, there are three, if I'm not mistaken. So it is often seen as like, you know, these guys are here to make up the numbers, or it's just a performative kind of thing. But in the first two games, he was exceptional, right? He was brilliant with the ball. I think the way he varied his pace and the way he kind of, in a sense, was able to outthink some of the batters was really good, because he doesn't get a lot of opportunities in first-class cricket. I'm not sure he has played even one game. He is with Tamil Union, if I'm not mistaken, a kind of a star-studded side. So it will be pretty tough for him to break into that side. But despite that, and I'm sure there are lots of other challenges. Of course, he would have had to move to Colombo from Jaffna. He's still very young. Lots of challenges, you know, breaking through in that domestic setup. But for him to be able to put up these kind of performances in the LPL is really fantastic to see. And we've seen him not so much in the second season. I think he was quite good with the opportunities he got in the first season. But here he's been in the first choice 11, right? And he's absolutely he's justified being picked, because he's picked up 5 wickets in 2 games. He's been economical, and what's good to see is that he's been, you can see that he's been, his dismissals are well thought out. So really impressed by him. Another, and I don't know whether you're keeping this for a later time in the recording, but Sadira Samaravikrama didn't play the first game. Obviously, Gurbaz, the preferred wicketkeeper opening batter for Jaffna Kings. But Sadira is a guy, another guy who's been very, very impressive in the domestic scene over the last, I don't know how many years, maybe 8 to 9 years since he left school. Very, very promising player. Played some international cricket, but wasn't given a long enough run. He gets this opportunity, play off the match. So that's another really good sign for Sri Lanka cricket. Of course, with the India series coming up, and we do have the dates. It's in January. It's starting on the 3rd. It's good to see youngsters like that, you know, getting an opportunity in positions that they prefer to kind of showcase what they've got.
Just going back to Veerstgaan, what I really, I want to draw comparisons between what Jaffna have done and what has happened in South African cricket, right? Because, and I don't want to get political about this because it's unfair for me to, because I've never lived in Sri Lanka, sadly. So I don't know what it's like on the ground, but it's quite clear if you look at where the players are coming from, that there is a large sway. If you are born geographically in the north or east of the country, you are less likely to be a professional cricketer and your chances of representing Sri Lanka are very, very slim. What could have, you know, and this is an issue that anyone involved in Sri Lankan cricket is aware of and has talked about. And I think that they could have been tempted, though I don't, you know, I say they could have been, it would have been easy to have just tried to shoehorn players in and give them a go and the system chewed them up and it not worked out, because playing the step up to playing, even from playing kind of a good level of schoolboy cricket or domestic cricket to playing even in the LPL is actually quite big. And you see that with some of the schools that some of the players put on in early on in their careers, or some of the figures that some of the bowlers get. But actually what we've seen with Jaffna is they resisted the temptation just to throw them in and to do it for the sake of it. And they've groomed him for 3 years and got him ready to play the game. And I think that is actually incredible. And it's real testament to what the franchise have done there. And I really hope that he goes on and has a great career in, you know, possibly representing Sri Lanka one day internationally. I mean, you've got to say he's in a difficult position because there is no end of very good leg spinners in Sri Lanka at the moment. And if not, I think it's possible that he might, you know, he doesn't need to have 150, 200 caps for Sri Lanka. He could go out and earn a very good living being a franchise player around the world if things work out for him. And I think it's great that Jaffna LPL franchise have given him the opportunity and set him up for that. And I think that to me is unbelievable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, when it's all about, you know, like drawing a comparison to South Africa as well. And I will preface this by saying that I don't know the, you know, I'm not qualified to really talk about the South African situation, but what I have seen people talk about is how it encourages other people to take part in cricket, like in South Africa, having the quota system and having more black cricketers play encourages more and more of them to get into the sport. Similarly, I think there is a very big kind of, I know there is a this perception amongst the Sri Lankan youth in the north and east that they are very much kind of second-class citizens, or they are overlooked for sports when it comes to selections and stuff like that. So sometimes it's very easy to kind of, you know, not even attempt to make it big in Sri Lanka cricket because you think it's of no use because you're not going to be picked anyway. And even if you are picked, having to move to Colombo and, you know, having to kind of uproot your life completely just for a chance, which might not work out, is just too much for a lot of people to think about. But just having someone like Veerstgaan, and I think there are a couple of others in that squad, just be in that setup and to see them on TV, to see them doing well, to see them getting opportunities is going to encourage a lot more youth in those areas to get into the sport. And it's not just the north and the east. I think even other areas of the country where you don't see that many players come through. When they do see players like We are coming from difficult situations, coming from areas that we don't see too many cricketers coming from, is going to encourage a lot of those players to come through. And we know, I mean, there is talent everywhere in Sri Lanka, right? Some of them probably never hold a leather ball in their hands for their lives, but could have been the next Murali or the next Malinga or the next Kumar Sangakkara. So just seeing players like Vyaskant coming through the system, I'm sure will encourage a lot more of those youngsters to get into the game and pursue this as like a dream.
Absolutely. There's been loads of other great performances. You mentioned Sadira, there's Siobhan Daniels, and we haven't even mentioned Dinneth, my favourite as well. We're going to do loads more episodes on the Lanka Premier League. So if you've just found us, please hit subscribe. As I say, tell your friends, leave your comments. We'd love to hear from you. I think we'll leave it there for today, Estelle, and we'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please do rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter at Mark Machado. That's me. You can follow Estelle at Estelle_Vazudeh1. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.